Every summer, my instead of sitting in front and playing my video games or being on my phone and doing social media, my mother kicked me out of the house. They didn't say, here's this organized sport that you do, or here's this place, but said, figure it out. And what that created was a few things. Number one is there was parks in our neighborhood that the city invested in that were safe, that actually had a representative that was creating activities. But it wasn't activities that I had to do with my parents or activities that I could do with my peers. So I'm developing social relationships of my peers inside of that community. I'm developing support networks on my own. I'm understanding how do you become social? How do you deal with social anxiety by being put out and doing it with peers to peers? And it aligns with work that was done in Okinawa, where they create these things called moais, where when you're about 5 years of age, your parents put you in other groups of kids your age, and they'll cultivate those relationships. So by the time you reach 20, they have the foundation to last a lifetime. Now, I met five women that belonged to the same moai for 97 years. Average age is 102. Got up every day and got together every night and ate the soba noodles. They drank our mori. They talked about the day's events. But, you know.
Namaste, beautiful souls. I'm Shilpa, and you're tuned into the Omni Mindfulness Podcast, a sanctuary for spiritual entrepreneurs. As a holistic mindfulness coach and social marketing strategist, I'm here to guide you on a transformative journey. On this show, we explore captivating stories and provide practical tools that deepen your connection with your authentic self. Through the personal and professional narratives of remarkable individuals, we expand our consciousness and ignite the spark of possibility. Each season, I curate content that empowers you to create a holistic lifestyle encompassing spirituality, mindfulness, energy awareness, and mindset. Join me as we engage in conversations with experts in their respective fields and share solo casts from yours truly, all aimed at supporting you and relaxing, revitalizing, resetting your body, mind, and spirit. I'm your host and the visionary behind Omni Mindfulness. So what if just one story had the power to shift the trajectory of your life? What if you could become an instrument in helping others realize their true selves? And what if your soul's higher purpose lies in experiencing the joy of Omni Mindfulness? Remember, it's never too late to rewrite your story. And now I am thrilled to welcome my very special guest, Nick Buettner. Nick is the co-founder of the renowned Blue Zones Project, which has spent decades uncovering the secrets to longevity and well-being from the world's longest lived communities. Along with his brother Dan, the founder of Blue Zones, Nick has traveled the globe to study the lifestyle factors and habits that allow people in places like Okinawa, Japan, and Sardinia, Italy, to routinely live past 100 years old. Nick is also the community and corporate program director at Blue Zones, an organization that has spent years studying these longevity hotspots. Back in 2004, Nick teamed up with his brother Dan, National Geographic, and leading longevity researchers to identify and explore these remarkable Blue Zones regions. Through groundbreaking research, Nick and his team have identified a set of key principles that we can now apply to our own lives to boost our health, happiness, and the length of our time on this planet. In our conversation today, Nick is going to share some of those powerful Blue Zone insights and explain how we can start incorporating more mindfulness, purpose, and community into our daily routines. So get ready to be inspired, motivated, and armed with practical tips to design a longer, more fulfilling life. Nick Buettner is here, and you won't want to miss a minute of this engaging discussion. Welcome, Nick. I am so honored to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
I have to say that after watching the National Geographic documentary on Blue Zone, then I got the book for Christmas for my husband because I love to cook and I consider myself somewhat savvy at making plant-based meals. It's been fun. So I thought, you know what? I need to figure out how to have a one-on-one with someone from Blue Zone. And, you know, it will be Earth Day soon, so I thought this is perfect timing.
I love it. I love it. If you don't know, kind of my background is I started the research in 1999 in partnership with my brother Dan to all the different blue zones. And then for about the last 14, 15 years, I've led the implementation of the work into blue zone project communities across the United States with partnerships with other people in the communities as well.
Oh, that's great. And I know there's so many facets of what I consider my word for the year is holistic harmony. And I really feel like Blue Zone does embody that on a very deep level after everything I've studied. And one of my first questions is in regards to mindfulness and mindfulness practices. And I'm going to go off to my notes to look at how I said this. I'm curious to hear about the role of mindfulness and stress reduction practices in long-lived communities, and what types of mindfulness techniques you have observed and maybe even incorporated into your lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, so for starters, what Dan and I did is there was a study called the Danish Twin Studies that said 80% of how long we live is determined by lifestyle factors and our habits. Only 20% is genetics or healthcare. So what we wanted to do was partner with demographers, epidemiologists, physicians to find those places in the world demographically confirmed where people are living the longest life. And we found nine commonalities that all these communities had. It was movement. They walked to school, they walked to their friend's house. They had a sense of purpose in their life that they could articulate. They had simple techniques to reduce stress, the mindfulness. They had a healthier diet, lower caloric intake, a little bit more plant-based. And then it was how they connected with their friends and family to support well-being. So when you think about mindfulness, there's a couple different things. Number one is stress causes inflammation that's tied to most age-related diseases. And if we can figure out how do we kind of take back that stress, be more intentional, if we can live more purposeful lives, that adds 7.5 more years to our life by articulating our sense of purpose and by living it out, it's incredibly valuable. Though that's what those Blue Zone communities did. They had simple techniques, whether it was walking with their friend, whether it was even taking a little bit of a nap, whether it was meditation or ancestor veneration in Okinawa. They had simple techniques to be able to get into that mindfulness. Now, as you look at the work that we're doing with communities around the United States, there are things that we can do with designing our environments at our work sites, with designing, breaking down isolation in communities. Or even with one project in the Beach Cities, we worked with the Goldie Hawn Foundation to integrate programs into the school that help kids at the young age identify those triggers in their head that start creating stress and anxiety. And then create an environment in the school where, number one, if they understand that, then you can create the tools and the support in this classroom that then allows them to be able to do something about it. And I believe that's one of the challenges we have right now is we don't understand when those when we have those things that kind of create triggers. And if we do, then we don't know how to become more mindful in really addressing it. So long answer, both in terms of Blue Zone projects, both in terms of Blue Zone communities, the so five hotspots around the world, they all had simple techniques that focus on mindfulness. And we now are trying to work with communities to also be more intentional, in one of the many ways in implementing those Power Nine so that they can be more intentional in those communities as well.
And from a perspective of someone who has been practicing mindfulness but realizes that, you know, it's not easy. What's I found profound is when you said to understand those triggers at a young age. Because sometimes, even as an adult, it's sometimes, a psychoanalysis that you're like, well, I don't know, maybe just fight or flight, or it's how we're conditioned as a human.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a few things that go into it, right? I mean, number one is I believe that in this country, our environment has changed drastically over the last 50 years. You know, what are those things that are creating mindful health around our diets? Are we exercising? Are we moving naturally? Are we getting that piece that ends up creating that? But it's endorphins kind of support it. You know, one of the things that we saw in our work with schools again is if you did walking school buses, if kids got together with their friends to walk to school every day and you get some of that thing out that gets your ants out of your pants, it also supports it versus sitting in front of the TV and versus sitting on social media, looking at those things that start to do it. How do we also get an activity? How are we also having that healthy diet? How are we getting up with things that are interesting in our life and aligned to our values to be able to go out living it? And in those moments where we feel that anxiety, do we know what we do about what to do about it? I.e., go for a walk, i.e., call a friend that will not only answer their phone, but listen to you. Or maybe it is meditation or yoga, whatever it is for that individual, for them to be able to kind of get rebalance. I think is kind of what we're talking about.
And when you mentioned going for a walk, it's so funny because in California we have to drive our car everywhere, and it turns out the neighborhood I live in is super hilly. So even getting to my son's school is it feels like a challenge. But as you were saying it out loud, I thought to myself, I should challenge myself. Maybe I should walk with him to school just as a form of exercise.
Yeah, well, and when you look at safe routes to schools or walking school buses, you know, it wasn't everybody had to walk all the way, but how are we creating safe pathways for those kids to be able to walk? So as parents, you're not afraid to allow your kids to walk and bike on their own as well. So what they did for what we've done in a number of communities across the country is not only is there walk to school, but you can drop off bus to walk where the buses drop the kids off blocks from school, where parents can drop their kids off or even walk with the kids. They don't have to go all the way, but they can. There's a point of which you're ensure that there's safety for those kids. And ideally, you can partner with the community, whether the police or other volunteers, teachers, to also make sure that there's a pathway there that is again secure for those kids to be able to walk. But if we can create that if we can create that environment and actually invest in it in ways that create the importance of health and the importance of walkability in our community, then it starts moving. And I say that because I would argue that over the last 100 years, the way we build cities is we prioritize sprawl. And we prioritize the car versus prioritizing the individual.
Sorry, I didn't realize I was on mute. And the prioritization of the car and other systems in place has been something that I've witnessed as a challenge because my husband is from the Midwest, where he did have a school bus, there was a lot of walking, and a very different childhood than what our son is experiencing, where we don't even have local buses funded by the city. All parents are working, high affluent parents who drive their kids from into school. So
Yeah. And what does that do to be able to create that stress? Now, when you have that kid that you have to be 100% accountable for, along with your job, along with making him dinner, along with all that other stuff that you have to do day in and day out, when if you have a community that is built around safety, with parks that are engaged and safe and clean, with other like-minded kids for that, where they can go and kind of play with, what is that ROI, even on the parent's life and the student's life?
I was raised partially in India, and I recall just the sense of community. I could go to my uncle's house, and my aunt would make a meal. She would play with me. Those kind of things really just are so difficult to integrate now. And you're right. It does put a level of burnout on, it's put a burnout on me.
Well, and there's a lot of other things with it as well. So I was what they call a free range kid. Every summer, instead of sitting in front and playing my video games or being on my phone and doing social media, my mother kicked me out of the house. They didn't say, here's this organized sport that you do, or here's this place, but said, figure it out. And what that created was a few things. Number one is there was parks in our neighborhood that the city invested in that were safe, that actually had a representative that was creating activities. But it wasn't activities that I had to do with my parents or activities that I could do with my peers. So I'm developing social relationships of my peers inside of that community. I'm developing support networks. On my own, I'm understanding how do you become social? How do you deal with social anxiety by being put out and doing it with peers to peers? And it aligns with work that was done in Okinawa, where they create these things called moais, where when you're about 5 years of age, your parents put you in other groups of kids your age and they'll cultivate those relationships. So by the time you reach 20, they have the foundation to last a lifetime. Now, I met five women that belonged to the same moai for 97 years. Average age is 102. Got up every day and got together every night and ate the soba noodles. They drank our mori. They talked about the day's events. But when you ask them, what does it mean? She says, well, the first thing I do when I get up in the morning is I slide open my front door and I look out to see if my friends' doors are open. And if they're not, I can go outside, I can go check on them. So you're going old without the need of a long-term care nurse. You're going old with the support of your family and the support of your friends. And that lasts all the way through your life. Now, here in America, about 40 years ago, the average American had about three best friends. It's now down to a friend and a half. And if you have less than three friends, you're defined as lonely. The impact that that has on your health is about the same as smoking 20 cigarettes a day. Now, to tie it back from mindfulness, how do you feel at the end of the day when you go do a walk with a friend?
And having, that's so scary because I have less than three friends and I consider myself friendly, but there's just either people are working or busy, and it's just been so hard, unless like pre-pandemic going to the gym. Now, yeah, so that affects longevity, and that's what that was one of the areas I wanted to go deeper in, is that in your studies, the lifestyle that you've noticed and then its impact on longevity, it also has a correlation with chronic disease and other issues. Can you elaborate on that?
Where lifestyle has an issue, has a link to chronic diseases? Yeah, 100%. I mean, in these communities, the power nine, those nine things I talked about, right? Now let's transform them here to America. Well, let me put it a different way. In America, when we talk about health and well-being, what we talk about is going to your doctor. It's that same relationship that you've had, that we've had with our doctor for 1,000 years before you even knew what cardiovascular disease was. It's that one-to-one relationship. Now they've started to try to get ahead of it, disease management and stuff like that. But the problem with acute care is it does very good for those people that are there and working with that doctor. But if you're not going to your doctor, if you're healthy or at risk of disease, or you're healthy and you're not going to that physician, what's the value of acute care for you and on your well-being? It's nothing. Now, I know I shouldn't smoke a cigarette. I know I shouldn't drink a big thing of soda or sit on a couch all day, but we as Americans, we do it anyways. Because at the time we do that activity, it doesn't kill us. Called hyperbolic discounting. I can have a Big Mac every day for lunch for the next 20 years and not die. But does that start creating obesity? That is then linked to cardiovascular disease, that's linked to cancer and things like that. So what we know now is who you're spending your time with, your friends and your family, their behaviors around health, the places where you work, live, play, and pray in your community, and the culture, social norms, and policies in a community are bigger determinants of your health than even your relationship with your doctor. Because I can effectively be put on a treatment plan without, without ever going to a doctor, because I have friends that support my health and well-being. They come up with interesting ways to how do I cook healthy and plant-based dishes. They want to do walks and get me out there exercising. I have in my work site, I think an unnecessary evil. People say work is an unnecessary evil, but I've never understood that. Why can't work be a place that I'm living out my purpose? Where I'm going in there and the skills and my passions and my values are being lived out. Why can't it be a place where I have a best friend? Why can't the design of it have a little bit of activity that gets me moving every day, as well as a healthy cafeterias and healthy choice architecture inside of there that actually lift up my well-being? In our grocery stores, what's the last thing we see in our grocery stores? Is it a healthy choice? No, it's soda pop, it's candy. Why can't the design of that be a little bit healthy? It has a big impact on our health. And our policies, if we're designing our communities around walkability or around cars, so you as a parent, you're afraid to walk and bike. If your food system doesn't have access to healthy foods, or it's too affordable, or there's no food skills that are being laid out in that community that align to the culture, then again, longevity is a lot harder to be able to live out than if the culture and environment, the life radius where you spend your time, promotes health and well-being. And it just makes that healthy choice a little easier.
And we had talked about this earlier, just the community and having that infrastructure in place. It sounds like what you were articulating. Actually, to back up one thing, you said something that truly excited me because it's one of the reasons I started my own company and my entrepreneurship, which has been an enormous amount of effort. But it was because I truly believe that your passion and your purpose and your personal desire to find happiness can all be one, but that is not how corporations are set up, because I've been told and I've seen it is that people say, okay, I have to leave my personality, my personal goals outside of the door when I go work. But work is always this unpleasant thing that causes friction. And it gives me joy to know that you believe that you can find a friend at work and can find joy.
Well, and he, I mean, everything is a merger, right? There's not one side. Life isn't perfect, and it's never going to be perfect. So let's set our expectations right. First of all, life isn't fair, and I don't think it ever will be, no matter how hard we try. But here's the interesting thing: is I think that right now work sites don't prioritize well-being. Because they don't know how to measure it. So we with Blue Zones is we will come in with a measurement system with Gallup and partnerships that will baseline well-being. Because we know if an individual inside of the workplace is healthier, they cost less because they don't have all the chronic, one of the biggest costs in healthcare is claims costs. Well, if I'm not getting sick because I'm healthier, I cost less for that employer. And also, if I'm not getting sick, I show up. I'm more productive. If I have good friends at work, I'm more productive because I have people supporting the work that I'm doing, right? We're all coming together as a better partnership and collaborators. But if you can focus on that and designing an environment where your leaders are leading for well-being, where again, according to Gallup, number one thing that indicates whether or not you want to go to work is whether or not you have a good friend. There are ways that we do to cultivate those friendships inside of work sites. We can align the purpose of the per individual to the purpose of the organization so that it's mutual. It's not one way or the other. But if If my purpose is aligned to the organization, then I feel like I'm doing something bigger than just me, right? But on the back end, if my leadership knows my purpose, my skills, my values, what excites me, they can better lead me and put me in positions where they can get the most out of me. So it is a mutual partnership in there. But you have to have the right leadership and you have to have the right willingness on both sides to be able to prioritize well-being and focus on it.
The word symbiotic came to mind, just
That's my
the
word.
notion. You're right. Yeah, because I feel like it's a mutual, that somebody understands you. You are still serving for a higher purpose, but in by virtue, they're also understanding how to nurture you and help you be happy.
Yeah, and ideally you're in it together, where we also let some of our selfishness go and the organization lets it and lets it go, right? And we understand that we are meeting with this higher purpose around our work. And we're also on the outside prioritizing our life outside, our family, family first. So how after work are we downshifting? Are we creating that mindfulness with our family, with our friends? In Loma Linda, from sundown on Friday to sundown on Saturday, doesn't matter where the kids need to be driven, what the boss told them to do, these guys check out. You know, they'll go to a congregation in the morning. In the afternoon, they'll do a nature walk with their friends and family. Now, what is the value of letting the stress of the week go and focus on your family, focus on your friends for intentionality for 5 hours every week? That's a huge value on our mindfulness and our well-being. But how do we, are we balancing that? Are we being intentional with those? And do we have environments that allow us to do that?
Now, when you mention environment, I know, and I mentioned this before we hit record, is that within the United States, for people that may not know this, Loma Linda is the only, I think, geolocation that has the Blue Zone status. Maybe you could share a little bit more about that, because I'm knowledgeable because I told you I have a friend who's from that community, but I'd love to know more.
Yeah, so there's two different things. There's a Blue Zone hotspots tied to our original research, and that was Loma Linda here in the United States. It was the Nicoya Peninsula of Costa Rica. It was part of Okinawa in Japan. It was Sardinia, Italy, and it was Ikaria in Greece, and we just are looking at Singapore as well. Now, these are places in the world, geographic locations where people are not only living the longest life, but they're doing it with a fraction of the disease. Because it is about our quality of health, not just our quantity. So those are blue zone hotspots. And Loma Linda is one of them, driven in some ways by the Adventists, Seventh-day Adventists, and the traditionals around them that tend to be more plant-based focused. They tend to focus on the community. They have practices built in there around downshifting. They pass on food skills around how do you cook healthy, which I think is one of the things. Now, there's a second thing that we call Blue Zone projects. So back in 2008, you know, the big aha moment in all those hotspots for me was never once did I go to a community and meet a centenarian at age 50 who said they want to go on a diet so they can live to 100. Never met.
Hey there, sweet souls. If you're finding value in this episode, I'd be so honored if you could take a moment to share it with that one person you know it would truly serve. And here's some exciting news. My podcast, Omni Mindfulness, was recently ranked in the top 10% globally by ListenScore. It's all thanks to your amazing support and listenership. So let's spread the love and wisdom together. Thank you for being a part of my mindfulness community. Sending you lots of love and light. This is Shilpa.
One person at age 50 said, "You know what? I want to start going to that gym so I can make it to 100." Longevity was never something they pursued. It ensued because their environment. So now what we're doing is working with communities, 90 communities across the United States, to put a team on the ground to basically help support how are we passing policies that are focused on walkability and bikeability and safe parks, and how are we bringing people together, placemaking, healthier food systems, looking at those things that drive addiction like tobacco and alcohol, leveraging policy that make it harder for kids to start, and a little bit easier for us to stop. To work with organizations, work sites, schools, restaurants, grocery stores, faith-based. We have these evidence-based pledge, and it's not us coming in to tell them what to do. They can pick and choose the things that they want. And then at an individual level, help them design their homes, how they spend their time with their family, break down isolation, and create more purpose. We hire a local team on the ground. We spend the first 9 months in partnership with the community. These are community-led, they're not led by us, developing a blueprint for transformation. That the leadership, so that the assets that exist in the community, we take advantage of, but then we overcome those challenges to design an environment where that healthy choice is easier. So no, however I'm interacting with that community, that healthy choice is a little bit easier. That's what we do around Blue Zone projects. And we do about 90, we're working about 90 of them across the United States, including in California. And it, again, it focuses in on trying to take away the individual discipline. The discipline is a muscle that fatigues. And how do we focus on setting up an environment that just makes it easier for people that want to be healthy? And I'm not saying you go in and you take, get rid of the hamburgers and get rid of all these things. It's just, how do we create a choice architecture that just makes it easier to make a healthy choice for the people that want to?
So on a related note, because when you use the word discipline and fatiguing the mind, I have been on a mission that I have for years practiced certain mindfulness techniques, but I too slip and I hit burnout. And this year I was like, you know what? I'm not going to hit burnout. I'm going to do all these things. And I would, like the simple techniques, like leaving out the workout clothes and the shoes nearby in the morning, so you do the simple things. But what I am hearing is like on a micro level, on a in cultural level or maybe geolocation level, you help reduce the fatigue that occurs when all that the onus of discipline is put strictly on yourself versus setting up the environment so it's helping you be conducive.
That's right. So, and your technique is one of the techniques is perfect, but it's if I'm as an individual, I want to go on a diet. Only about 7% of the population can actually stick with a diet. They don't work. So, if you're trying to create a program, a population health program that are fighting the chronic diseases that are killing our kids, it doesn't work. I don't know if any of your listeners has ever joined a health club. And you start off really good for that first month, and then all of a sudden you're just sending in your dues every week. Or even if you have that pill, that Ponce de Leon pill that you take it every day, and I'll live forever. That adherence rates, you lose them. They don't, they're not, it's not sustainable. So what we at Blue Zones tries to focus on is how are we setting up environments where that healthy choice is easier, just a little bit easier. By the design of our environments on our culture and the norms. So if we design a community where you as a parent aren't afraid to allow your kids to walk and bike, to school or wherever they're going, if we can create better access, more affordability, if we can look at our schools and our work sites and our restaurants and our grocery stores. It doesn't have to be huge, but what if I go to that restaurant and have a healthy choice on that menu? More plant-based options to be able to choose. You still got the burgers and whatever else. Or what about if that side is just a salad? Or in a grocery store, I was mentioning earlier, what if we change that checkout lane? So the last thing you see is locally sourced nuts, or things that promote our health and well-being. So that impulse buy, is it healthy? You still can get your sodas, they just don't have to be where scientifically you grab that healthy food. And then lastly, at an individual level, I don't know if anybody ever, your listeners have tried to become or on a journey of being vegan or vegetarian, but if you go out to dinner with your friends and they're not vegan or vegetarian, now all of a sudden your choice options becomes difficult. You become that outcast. But if I have the right friends and that social support, it just makes it a little bit easier. And that's what we're talking about, because that's sustainable.
Yes, and it is those simple things, because I know about 20 plus years ago when my husband first met me, when we'd go to a restaurant, because I've always been mostly plant-based vegetarian, he would witness someone who he didn't have a plant-based diet before he met me, but he switched very quickly. But he would observe me get very creative with these menus at restaurants, and it's gotten easier the last 10, 15 years where I can find that black bean burger.
Or even what about a half portion? Right? What do you get at the right now? You're getting this big plate, and we eat mindfully. You're going to eat the whole thing down. But what if they only put a half of a portion size in front of you? Probably might be all you need to eat, and now you're not forced to eat the rest of them because it's sitting, we're taught the clean plate club.
Yeah. And how many times have I been with my husband where he'll finish his whole plate and he'll be like, oh, that really was too much.
Right? That's it.
Yeah. So now going back to one last topic before I have my final question, which is really something you've touched upon, but I wouldn't mind going a tiny bit deeper on it because it really speaks to me, is that you talked about purpose and social connection and insights on cultivating these aspects of life can help expand the life. So how does this in your what you've witnessed is helps with happiness? And have you seen like some case studies within developing blue zones in the US where consciously creating those environments helps people with their level of happiness?
I mean, to me, there's definitely case studies through there are a lot of research around the power of purpose. If you haven't read Richard Leiter's book, The Power of Purpose, it's one of the more he's one of the more brilliant people and researchers around purpose. But you think about it, if you have those skills that you wake up, you have skills that you're things that you're good at. There's things that you love to do. You have morals and values. If you can align all of those and then wake up every morning and live it out, that has a huge, yes, I'm happier because it creates flow because I'm doing things that I love to do versus focusing in on things that just etch at my psyche day in and day out. You know what I mean? So how do I design, how am I aligning my purpose? How am I understanding what are the really skills that are good at? What are those things I like to do? And what are my values? So that when I wake up, I have something interesting to do every day that are aligned to that. Then you create flow and happiness through there because you're not doing those things that you hate to do. And around social, isolation sucks. I'm sorry to use that word so abruptly, but if I have a friend that will listen to me. So I go and do a walk and I'm having this, I'm stuck in my brain, but I have a friend that will listen to me and help give me guidance that can end up aligning. Maybe it's my purpose. Maybe it's helping me out with a problem that I'm having with my kid that I don't know the answer to. In one case, in multiple cases, actually, we created these moais inside of a community. And in two cases, a member came up to me and they said, during this moai, I met a group of people I didn't know. And partway through the moai, my husband got sick. This happened twice, two different communities. And what ended up happening is I had to quit my job for a while. I had to take a leave because I had to take my husband through chemo, through this journey that I've never been on. And you know what the moai did? They called me every single day to check in on me. I was able to talk to them. A few of them were nurses that have gone through this process before and could guide me. They brought over food so that I was eating. They took me out for walks. So now I have the support mechanism that is supporting me in a time of my life where I really need that help. But it also creates accountability. If I all of a sudden one day a week I say I'm going to walk with a group of people, after a certain amount of time, if you don't show up, you feel like you're letting them down. You feel like you're not there. So it also creates accountability to our health and our well-being. But I think both of those are tied to happiness.
You
Very
know,
strong.
it's very strong. And when you mentioned accountability, kind of thought of my dad. My mom passed away unexpectedly a few years ago, and you know, he's alone. So he'll text me. He did it in moments before our podcast. He's like, "I'm leaving for my walk now. It's really beautiful and sunny outside." But I feel like he needs to just share that. And it's like this emotional connection that he needs to have with me.
Yeah.
So Nick, I have one question that kind of is tied to two concepts. One is sort of a bigger question. There's no real answer to it, perhaps, but it's more something that is tied to something that's close to my heart, which is what is the price or the cost of not making conscious effort in creating these blue zones? And then that's tied to a question from Dr. Priya Bhatt, who serves as a council member on the city of Carlsbad, and she is passionate. She's a passionate advocate for public health initiatives in her community where she grew up, and I've been living here for close to 20 years as well. And her question is, as a local leader interested in improving the well-being of Carlsbad residents, is curious what it would take for our city to become certified Blue Zone community. And what are the key steps and potential costs we need to consider?
Yeah. What was the first question again?
Yeah. So she said, "I'm curious what it would take for our city to
No,
become."
before that, you had a question before that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so the bigger picture question is more coming from me. But what is the price or the cost of not consciously making these
Gotcha.
efforts?
So what well, let's start there. The cost is a lot of different things. The cost has, number one, a individual level. So if I all of a sudden, because of my diet, how I'm eating, my mental health, I don't have a quality of life. That I haven't reached the potential. Not I don't have a quality of life, but I can have a better quality of life. And it also impacts, if I'm stressed out, that impacts swelling. Impacts brain disease, dementia, Alzheimer's. It impacts diabetes and heart disease. It impacts all these things that can take away from the time that you spend with your family. There's a term called compression of morbidity. It's a time between when you get sick and when you die. It's where we spend most of our healthcare dollars. It's a time of life where you need somebody to take care of you. On average here in America, it's 4.5 years. In Okinawa, it's less than a year. They're living out their purpose and they're living out their values all the way to the end of the life. They're doing those things that they love, like spending time with their grandkids, because they can still do that. So there's a lot of value at a personal level, but there's also value at an economic level. When I look at a community right now, there's a simulation model that we've developed in partnership with Gallup that looks at what is the cost of doing nothing in a community tied to productivity, our work sites, tied to economic well-being in the community, or not economic well-being, but prosperous. You know, at the end of the day, where do you want to move? Where do you want your kids to live? Do you want it to live in a healthy community where the schools are good, where there's walkability? It increases the benefits of me getting the right job, you know, inside of it. And there's also claims costs and medical costs. If I have less, if I'm coming into a community healthier because of my environment, I'm not using as much healthcare in that community. I cost less for that community. So there's economic at an organizational level, at an individual level, and at a community level. Now, to bring blue zones in, these are 5 to 10 year initiatives. The first step is you bring us in to do either a speech. That could be the first step to try to bring the stakeholders to hear me do a presentation for the community around Blue Zones, leveraging my travels and the work that we're doing to try to draw enough interest, because these are collective impact models. I need individuals at the city level, at organizational levels, individuals, nonprofits, school systems to come together around a common plan. That's the first step, but these are multi-year, multi-million dollar initiatives. So the first step is I want to bring in a team of people to understand what is the readiness for a Blue Zone project in your community. Are you ready for this? Are you really ready to do the work and educate you on what Blue Zones is, your leaders, and then come together around what should that scope of work be for a community? Because every community is different. Carlsbad is different than Coachella. Coachella is different than Salinas. Salinas is different than Monterey. So how do we come in very intentional around Blue Zones to make sure that the work that we do align? And then from there, we start our work. These are multi-year, multi-million dollar a year initiatives. And most of that money is focused in hiring a local team, because most of the time this work is done on the side of somebody's desk. So in this way, we can focus, hire a local team to lead that work. We bring in Gallup to oversample so that we understand the baseline. We work with the community for 9 months to create the right steering committee structure, leadership structure, to train and develop the team, to get the right measurement around community indicators as well as Gallup, and then put together a blueprint so that we're not replacing the work that's happening, but how are we aligning to create collective impact, drive more capacity. And then after that 9 months, then we implement the blueprint year over year for the next 3 to 10 years, depending on the size and scope of the community. And each year we redo that blueprint and we look at key performance indicators year in or year out to ensure that we're moving needle on what is the community want to move the needle on when it comes to health. And we put 25% of our fees at risk to say that we're doing it. And that way I know our team is actually accountable and a partner to that community, to that work.
So there are measures or KPIs put in place so you know that when you're making progress, there are milestones that are evident.
There's progress indicators as well as outcome indicators throughout our program. When we look at some of the work we've done in one community, it was a reduction of childhood obesity by 55%. It was an increase in a lower of city healthcare claims by 50%. We saw tobacco reduction by use in the community by 12%. There's multiple measures, and they can be tied to Gallup or they can be tied to community indicators for the life of the project. But some of these things, like childhood obesity, have tails, right? There's a lot of things that have to be in place before. It might take 3-4 years before you really start seeing that decrease. So we work with other experts in the community to understand how do we know, what are those progress indicators to make sure that we're on target. And that's what gets put in those blueprints.
So what I'm hearing or processing is that it's not one size fit all. There's a framework, so to speak. But
that's right.
As you research and get to know that environment, like you were saying, Coachella is different from Monterey. So Carlsbad may have its own set of unique attributes that you need to work with or challenges.
That's right. You know, what I look at is how do you meet the community where they're at? You want to make sure that you have the right leadership. And I'm not talking about a plurality. I'm talking about the right champions at the table with a common vision for well-being, the right leadership. Then you have to make sure you're putting the right resources in, both human and economic. The third thing is you want to create a plan that's based in sustainability with evidence-based, science-informed strategies that are moving the needle. And then the last thing is accountability, and that's accountability to measurement and also accountability if these are true we projects. It can't be somebody else doing the work for you. This has to be locally owned. That you need accountability from the community for people to do what they say they're going to do. And that is the structure of Blue Zones that we've set up. And we have measurement with Gallup. We have measurement with outcome indicators. We have ways to create alignment and strategies in our foundation to create that blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah.
So when you said leadership, does that mean that someone has to have a formal role in the government or local government or credentials? Like I don't have a medical background, I have a computer science degree, something like that.
What I need to do in a community, the way I define certification, is I want to see enough policies passed by your city leaders around built environment, food systems, tobacco, and alcohol policy that help create an environment that supports walkability, that supports healthy eating, and that fights addiction. The second thing I need is enough organizations, work sites, restaurants, grocery stores, schools to become what we call Blue Zone approved. We have these evidence-based menus. People can go through there at their own pace, and each different organization can pick and choose the things that they want to do, tied to the outcomes that they want, right? So if I'm looking for more productivity in my work site, I can choose those things that align to better social health, for example, right? And those strategies that set up that environment. In our grocery stores or restaurants, it's tied to sales, you know, so there it's a win-win. And then lastly, I want enough individuals that are engaged, that are joining Moais, that are creating more friendships, that are identifying their purpose, and that are out there living out their purpose, ideally through volunteering, through giving back. And there's huge alignment to happiness through volunteering.
I'm 100 levels want to continue going deeper on all of this, and I will be following up with you, but I want to make sure I get Dr. Priya's question, which was, so after the big picture question, you may have already answered it, which was, what is the cost of not doing it, which I really believe that you've given us a great answer. But then she went on to ask, I'm curious what it takes for a city to become certified. It sounds like the process you articulated is the answer, and what are the key steps and potential costs we need to consider in starting to implement those longevity boosting principles across the Carlsbad region?
Yeah,
Anything?
the first step to get started is one of two things. Number one, if there's is already the readiness and the plurality to do an assessment, where there's a fee for it. It depends on the size of the community to pull together that partner to do it. If there's not the plurality or readiness to do the assessment, then what I recommend is I do probably 50 speeches a year, leveraging National Geographic photography and this collective impact model that can be leveraged to inspire or share or educate people around the value of really focusing on our environment. And what you can do is bring me in, and we can pull together not everyone, but the right partners in that community. And we can have a conversation around whether or not this is right for Carlsbad. Because somebody has to write a check for this. And usually, this money doesn't come from cities. Usually, it comes from healthcare partners, payers, providers. It comes from large organizations that are going to get the value in this, and other nonprofits that are looking at this as being a stepping stone to get to where they want to go. So, and Blue Zone, my speech can create that alignment. And if you already have the alignment, we'll move right into the assessment.
This is wonderful, Nick. Well, you'll certainly be hearing from me.
Love it.
Thank you for your time. I absolutely am so giddy and excited that we had this conversation. You made my day, and I hope we'll see the fruitions of this effort very soon. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in, sweet soul. If you've enjoyed this episode, I would be so grateful for your kind review on Apple Podcast. Simply click on the link in the show notes to leave your lovely feedback and uplift our spirits. Your support means the world to me and helps our show thrive. So please show me your love and continue to practice Omni Mindfulness.